This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Race and Anthropology, Part 5. It's going to be more about Franz Boas and how racialism was derailed. Quoting one of the giants of anthropology, Ruth Benedict, I ran into this quote this week on the internet. The purpose of anthropology, she said, is to make the world safe for human differences. And I think that's a good quote because it sums up the political advocacy, the partisanship, really, in the minds of the people doing anthropology, that they're trying to make the world safe. I would just differ here, and this also I think is typical, though, of what modern anthropology is that it's dishonest, that it's trying to make the world safe for human differences. I don't think that that's true at all. I think it's dominated by Jews. It has been from the beginning, from Boas, and that the purpose of Jewish anthropology is to make the world safe for Jews. And this is one of the main ways that they do that, is by disguising it as some high-minded pursuit of more general interests. But that isn't what's really going on. So tonight I have two different references to refer to and to read some bits and pieces and comment on. And let me get right to it, is titled The Passion of Franz Boas. This is a sympathetic article, a very long article, comes in a PDF written by Herbert Lewis, Professor Emeritus of the Department of Anthropology at University of Wisconsin-Madison, and it was published back in 2001 and made available on the web a few years later. But this is a sympathetic defense of Franz Boas, and it's a defense of Boas because basically it was answering criticism of Boas from the children of the anti-racist revolt that he led. And it's done in a typically Jewish fashion. I assume that Herbert Lewis is Jewish just from the way he thinks and the way he argues, and the name Lewis is a typical Jewish name. And he's an anthropologist. But somebody go ahead and prove me wrong. I think he is. Anyway, he answers these criticisms by presenting them and then waving his hands and blowing smoke about them. He really doesn't answer them. And his main answer really boils down to what a great anti-racist Boas was, and specifically cites examples of Boas being a great anti-racist. And the reason why that Boas needs to be defended at all from these children of the revolution is that they think he's a racist because he didn't think of race in the terms that it has come to be thought of today. In Boas's time, Boas was the thin edge of a wedge where he used the concept of race. He acknowledged that race exists. What he did was he just basically argued that it was plastic, that it was more plastic than it really was, actually. And that, therefore, it wasn't so important. And, of course, today the idea of race is that it's completely invalid, it doesn't exist, and it's just something that crazy white people made up. And that's why they look back to Boas and they read some of the things he wrote about race, and he didn't put little sneer quotes around the word race. He used the word race as if he really thought it existed. And so this is an aspect of Boas and race that, of course, Lewis doesn't face directly. He just sidesteps it. He himself uses race with quotes around the word, and even when he cites Boas talking about race and makes no real reference to it than the fact that Boas is obviously accepting the concept of race as existing. Anyway, so that's the evolution over time of how this attack on racialism was made and why today people will criticize Boas. And so in a nutshell, that's what this paper is about. But let me just cite a few of the highlights from this paper. Right on the first page, Lewis talks about a critic in 1969 named William Willis, who argued that Boasian scientific anti-racism was concerned only secondarily with colored peoples. Willis contended that scientific anti-racism was in reality both an attempt to combat anti-Semitism and an intellectual weapon in the struggle of Boas and other European Jews around him, quote, for the domination of anthropology in the United States. He concluded that the effort of Boas and his colleagues to combat racism was just another exploitation of colored peoples for the benefit of white people. And this sounds like a person who is seeking the best interests of colored people and feels some affinity for colored people. And this would explain why he's upset with Boas. Now, Lewis doesn't answer this criticism. He just says how this Willis guy eventually came to like Boas more years later. He doesn't face the criticism that Jews actually have come to dominate anthropology in the United States, and they did it actually by the time in Boas's day, in fact, as we'll get to a little later, the details of that. He gets into several other criticisms of Boas, and he keeps repeating over and over again, why are these people attacking Boas? He doesn't seem to understand why anyone would want to attack Boas. And then later in the paper, he himself talks about the importance of Boas and how giant Boas was in the history of anthropology and anthropology, the thinking behind anthropology and anti-racism. So he's either stupid or lying in not being able to understand why people would criticize Boas. And that's one of the ways he waves his hands and blows smoke. He doesn't really address the critiques. In fact, he says he doesn't have the time or space in a 30 or 40 page essay about Boas to answer any of these criticisms in more detail than that. He explains, though, that he sees the source of the criticism as coming from this culture of critique, this trend in Western society that, according to him, came out of nowhere, sparked by a general dissatisfaction and anger that accompanied the Vietnam War and was heightened by the struggles of the civil rights movement, the movement for women's rights, the worldwide students' movements of the late 1960s, and concern about the condition of peoples in the colonial world. These are all Jewish intellectual movements, all highly influenced by Jews. He doesn't mention that, of course. He identifies it as critical theory and notes that it drew heavily on Marxist writings, though. So you sort of have to read between the lines in this guy's defense of Boas. Sort of. You have to do it from beginning to end, actually. That's one of my main points here in citing this. In a section titled In Defense of Boas, here is where he gets into the bona fides of the anti-racist bona fides of Franz Boas. He writes, it is difficult today to realize the extent of Franz Boas's influence as a scholar, as an institution builder, and as a public intellectual, because the scope of his work was so enormous and his impact so widespread. In the absence of any complete biography, we must depend upon widely scattered articles and chapters. Yes, I see that myself. And it's notable that Lewis did not cite the second reference that I'm going to talk about, because it's an adversarial reference that has a very substantial criticism of Boas and the people around Boas. But Lewis makes no mention of it. In a section titled Franz Boas's Ideals, he lists several. I'll just read one here, number four. He fervently believed in the absolute value of equal rights and equal opportunity for all individuals and peoples. He hated classifying and lumping people into categories and insisted upon the importance of individuality. He had contempt for chauvinism and narrow loyalties at the expense of other groups and of humankind. This also meant respecting other ways of life, other cultures, and not assuming a priori the superiority of one's own. This, to me, sounds like a real contradiction of what anthropology should be, which is the study of the human condition in all its variety and warts and all, racial feelings and included. And instead of trying to deny that they exist or but that's this is where we get to, you know, why did Boas do what he did and how did he go about it? And how does that tell us why he was doing what he did? And I'll hopefully that will come through as in as I go along here. I'm flipping through the paper because it's just a printout. I wasn't able to copy and paste from this one. So bear with me as I find the next thing that I noted worthy of commenting on. He goes into more detail, Lewis does, about Boas. When Boas began his work in America, about what's good about Boas, when Boas began his work in America, evolutionism was the dominant, even hegemonic, paradigm in anthropology, sociology, and political economy. Intellectuals of the political left were as invested in evolutionism as were those on the right. In addition to evolutionism, racial determinism and social Darwinism were also in the ascendance. And these touched the emotions and socioeconomic interests of American and European elites even more. This was the era of the passage of Jim Crow laws, racial segregation, and anti-black and anti-foreigner agitation. Despite their entrenched status in American and European intellectual and political life, however, Boas, a new immigrant, virtually alone, started to combat all of these from the very beginning of his career, drawing upon his view of humanity and on his science. Were these not political acts? He's arguing that Boas was political from the very beginning of his career. And I'm convinced by the argument. Boas's attack on evolutionism, in addition to the theoretical and technical aspects, involved an attempt to establish the common humanity of primitive man in scientific and popular discourse, to remove the supposed gap between our minds and theirs, and to question the assumption that our culture is special, exalted, better than others. The evolutionism of this period was heavily weighted with the assumptions of the biological and mental inferiority of the colored races, the quote-unquote colored races, and the primitives. Boas attacked this position directly from a variety of perspectives, beginning as early as his first articles in Science. So that's Lewis's reason to like Boas, because he was a great anti-racist and he was his first whole career. Boas's work on racial difference in physical anthropology had the intended effect of calling into question 60 or 70 years of quote-unquote scientific racial determinism, the intellectual rationalization for segregation. In his 1911 book, The Mind of Primitive Man, the main arguments were, and he's quoting directly from Boas here, there is no fundamental difference in the ways of thinking of primitive and civilized man. A close connection between race and personality has never been established. I'll just inject here to say that I think that there has been scientific evidence has been found for a link between, for the hereditability of personality traits. Which is a racial thing. Heredity is race. The concept of racial type is commonly used, even in scientific literature, is misleading and requires a logical as well as a biological redefinition. See, he didn't say that it was invalid. He just said it required redefinition. Let me skip ahead here to something else interesting. He worked, as I cited in the last installment, he worked with black organizations and advocated for blacks. And he worked on, in particular, an encyclopedia of the Negro race. And this is one of those instances where he worked on something that acknowledged the reality of race, in this case, the Negro race. And it's hard to deny that he did it, because it's right there in the title of the work that he worked on. Just wanted to point that out for that reason. The problem of racism and prejudice remained among Boas's central concerns all his life until the moment of his death. Paul Rivette, the French anthropologist who was being honored at the luncheon at which Boas died, and that was in 1942, I think, reports that Boas's last words were, quote, "One must never tire of repeating that racism is a monstrous error or an impudent lie." And I think that's notable because it's more true of anti-racism, which, on the one hand, you have white people who are making a monstrous error in believing that it's a high-minded and noble pursuit to end racism of all sorts, and that it's can be found everywhere in all races or in all types of people, and that race truly doesn't exist. And then on the other hand, you have the Jewish people that participate in it that are impudently lying because they're doing what they believe to be in the best interests of their narrow group of people. And they're well aware of it. That would include Boas and Lewis and many of the other, if not all, of the Jewish anthropologists since. There's an interesting note here tucked away at the end of the paper in the notes that reads, Marshall Hyatt, in a fair and useful book, suggests that Boas's own experiences with discrimination were the immediate stimulus for his attacks on racism. But, quote, "rather than call attention to his own plight and risk accusations of subjectivity, Boas chose another aspect of bigotry that directed against Afro-Americans, at which to vent his distress." And so this is a reference, this is a note in relation to the work that Boas did with blacks. He was involved with the NAACP early on. And what I want to say about this is there's an old bit of folk wisdom, I think, comes out of Poland about the Jews. And the saying goes, "the Jew cries out in pain as he strikes you." And I think this is worthy of a modification of that, which would be, "the Jew cries out in pain as he secretly helps your enemies to strike you." At the conclusion to this long paper, even after the notes, Lewis includes a quotation here from Michel de Montaigne, and it's a quote from 1580. And it goes like this: "I see most of the wits of my time using their ingenuity to obscure the glory of the beautiful and noble actions of antiquity, giving them some vile interpretation and conjuring up vain occasions and causes for them. What great subtlety! Give me the most excellent and purest action, and I will plausibly supply 50 vicious motives for it. God knows what a variety of interpretations may be placed on our inward will for anyone who wants to elaborate them." This is just ridiculous, really, to tack this on the end. Of course, Lewis intends this to serve as a defense, as part of the defense of Boas, that Boas is being attacked unfairly for having vicious motives. And I think, again, that this applies better to what anti-racists do retrospectively, retroactively, smearing and distorting and imputing vicious motives to the people who thought and discussed race and race science in history, and calling it scientific racism and social Darwinism, and pathologizing and demonizing those people, and talking about or implying that they had ulterior motives for what they were doing and they had secret motives. It's really I think it's a projection of their own doublethink, their own, especially with Jews, this constant crypsis that they, this cloak that they have to keep around themselves. They talk in these high-minded and very general-sounding justifications for what they do, but all the time they're very conscious of the best interests of their group, the Jews. So let me also point out that this fellow, Michel de Montaigne, has Jewish ancestry. Of course, when I looked him up on Wikipedia, on both his father's and his mother's side, on his father's side, I think it's suspected, on his mother's side, it's known for sure, he had crypto-Jewish grandparents. So for what it's worth, there. And so it's no wonder that Lewis would find that and cite that. So let me move here. I only have a short amount of time, but let me – I'll definitely link it and mention some of the highlights here from Kevin MacDonald's Chapter 2. Let me find this my pages here. This is from Chapter 2 from his longer work called The Culture of Critique, and he published this as a PDF and made it available for free on the internet. So it's titled The Boasian School of Anthropology and the Decline of Darwinism in the Social Sciences. And The Culture of Critique is subtitled An Evolutionary Analysis of Jewish Involvement in 20th Century Intellectual and Political Movements. A good book. I haven't read the whole thing. I've just read chapters like this one, isolated bits and pieces of the book. Several writers have commented on the radical changes that occurred in the goals and methods of the social sciences consequent to the entry of Jews into these fields. Degler notes that the shift away from Darwinism as the fundamental paradigm of the social sciences resulted from an ideological shift rather than from the emergence of any new empirical data. He also notes that Jewish intellectuals have been instrumental in the decline of Darwinism and other biological perspectives in American social science since the 1930s. The opposition of Jewish intellectuals to Darwinism has long been noticed, and he cites Lenz here. In sociology, the advent of Jewish intellectuals in the pre-World War II period resulted in a level of politicization unknown to sociology's founding fathers. It is not only that the names of Marx, Weber, and Durkheim replaced those of Charles Darwin and Herbert Spencer, but also that the sense of America as a consensual experience gave way to a sense of America as a series of conflicting definitions. In the post-World War II period, sociology became populated by Jews to such a degree that jokes abounded. And Kevin MacDonald is such a good and dispassionate writer, and I'm tempted to read the whole thing, but it's there for you to read, and I will link it, and I hope you do read the whole thing from beginning to end. I'll point out here that it was Jews doing the joking, and especially after World War II, they were joking because they had won that war and escaped from racialism and being identified for who and what they are. To skip to the end note having to do with this reference to Lenz, remarks on what I've already talked about with the Fritz Lenz and this Jewish, his comments on the Jewish fondness for Lamarckism, that the Jewish inclination toward Lamarckism is obviously an expression of the wish that there should be no unbridgeable racial distinctions. And we see this also with Boas, this and the anthropologists around him, this idea that race shouldn't be significant. There's no unbridgeable racial distinction. So it's essentially the same motive, just expressing in a different form. MacDonald actually paraphrases and writes, the obvious interpretation of such sentiments is that the Jewish intellectuals oppose natural selection because of possible negative political implications. The suggestion is that these intellectuals were well aware of ethnic differences between Jews and Germans, but wished to deny their importance for political reasons. An example of deception as an aspect of Judaism as an evolutionary strategy. and this evolutionary strategy, Judaism as an evolutionary strategy, is Kevin MacDonald's theory that explains a lot of Jewish behavior. He also writes, Lenz states that the Jewish opposition to discussion of race and inevitability the discussion of race inevitably arouses the impression that they must have some reason for fighting shy of any exposition of racial questions. He's actually quoting a statement Lenz made there that I hadn't seen quoted previously. Back to MacDonald's main text here, he writes that this chapter, just to give you a spirit of it, will emphasize the ethnopolitical agenda of Franz Boas, but it is worth mentioning the work of Franco-Jewish structuralist anthropologist Claude Levi-Strauss, because he appears to be similarly motivated. Levi-Strauss interacted extensively with Boas and acknowledged his influence. In turn, Levi-Strauss was very influential in France. Levi-Strauss's most significant works were all published during the breakup of the French colonial empire and contributed enormously to the way it was understood by intellectuals. That's basically the way the Jews do things. They influence how intellectuals see things, and then it trickles down from there to the masses. His elegant writings worked an aesthetic transformation on his readers, who were subtly made to feel ashamed to be Europeans. Degler emphasizes the role of Franz Boas in the anti-Darwinian transformation of American social science. Boas's influence upon American social scientists in matters of race can hardly be exaggerated. Boas engaged in a lifelong assault on the idea that race was the primary source of the difference to be found in the mental or social capabilities of human groups. He accomplished his mission largely through his ceaseless, almost relentless articulation of the concept of culture. Boas almost single-handedly developed in America the concept of culture, which, like a powerful solvent, would in time expunge race from the literature of social science. Boas did not arrive at the position from a disinterested scientific inquiry into a vexed, if controversial, question. There is no doubt that he had a deep interest in collecting evidence and designing arguments that would rebut or refute an ideological outlook, quote-unquote racism, which he considered restrictive upon individuals and undesirable for society. That's the high-minded generalization, or general interests, that I mentioned earlier. The preponderance of Jewish intellectuals in the early years of Boasian anthropology and the Jewish identities of anthropologists in subsequent generations has been downplayed in standard histories of the discipline. Jewish identifications and the pursuit of perceived Jewish interests, particularly in advocating an ideology of cultural pluralism as a model for Western societies, has been the invisible subject of American anthropology. Invisible because the ethnic identification and ethnic interests of its advocates have been masked by a language of science in which such identifications and interests were publicly illegitimate. And that's how they did it, ladies and gentlemen. They made discussion of race illegitimate. Stupid, crazy, evil white people are the only ones who think that race actually exists and is significant. That's the basic approach that they took. And Boas was the beginning of that, but Levi-Strauss and all the way through Lewis today